Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening at TSN1290.ca, good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday night, the night after the Jets' 5-3 victory over the St. Louis Blues, the night before the Jets take on the Dallas Stars in Dallas, a key Central Division matchup. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. I'm joined in studio by the man to my left, Ezra Ginsberg. On my far left, Joel Marcoux joins us as well in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. Gentlemen, I say good morning. Good evening to you both. I'm thinking that Saturday, obviously. Good evening to you both. Nice to see you both. How are you both doing?
Doing good, Drew, and you know the Jets are doing even better.
Yeah,
with a couple of wins.
Two wins in a row.
Yeah.
It's a juggernaut.
And, no complaints.
Yeah, you're looking at those standings right now, and you're only a point behind, so it's pretty incredible, you know, considering that after those two losses to the Anaheim Ducks and San Jose Sharks, you know, things weren't looking too good for the Jets, but, you know, an all-star break can change a lot.
Yeah, or the game before the all-star break, and they come back with on a winning note last night after returning from the 4 or 5 days off for everybody but Patrick Laine on the Jets team.
And they're now 0-9 when going for that third consecutive W after doing it, right?
Right.
35-19 being outscored in those opportunities. So can they get that elusive third win, guys, and maybe get on a little bit of a roll here and take advantage of this, considering that they've got, 10 games to go before their bye week? So drain the tank, go into the bye week feeling good, because if things go sideways and the other way around, then you're going into the bye week with
nothing left to play for on the other end of it. You're absolutely right about that, Joel. And we'll, of course, talk about the game tomorrow night in Dallas. We'll be joined by Craig Ludwig, Dallas Stars analyst, coming up at the bottom of the hour. Of course, we'll also look at in more in-depth at the playoff picture. But we start last night in that game in St. Louis, the first game off of the All-Star break. St. Louis opens the scoring. They take that 1-0 lead. But for the most part, I thought the Jets played a solid game. Probably, I don't know if they necessarily outplayed St. Louis in the entirety of the game, but they took advantage of some shaky St. Louis goaltending. Mm-hmm. They took advantage of a St. Louis Blues team that is reeling, and clearly so, as they fired Ken Hitchcock earlier today, which we'll talk about later on in the program, and be joined by Luke Korak, who covers the St. Louis Blues for NHL.com. But it was a workmanlike effort for the Jets. Not all great, but good enough to get a much-needed victory over a Central Division rival.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty solid game, Drew. And, you know, you look at the way Andrei Pavlik played in the second period, and, you know, it looked like the St. Louis Blues might have scored a few more goals there. They got the late goal in the second period from Vladimir Tarasenko. A little bit of a, you know, botched coverage in the defensive zone for the Jets. But, I mean, you look at the game, and what I liked the most about that game, in addition to Andrei Pavlik's goaltending, was the Jets stayed out of the penalty box for the most part.
Yeah.
They only gave St. Louis one power play.
Yeah.
And I thought the top two lines for the Jets, and looking at the Jets, the top two forward lines and the top two D pairs for the Jets were very solid.
Yeah.
And, you know, I actually thought that the worst line for the Jets was the Adam Lowry line. I thought they really struggled in their own zone. But when you're talking about the top two lines, and specifically Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler, who each put up 3 points, mm-hmm. I thought that that line was incredible. And, you know, you had Brian Little up there with Patrick Laine and Nikolai Ehlers, and they obviously scored those two goals in the second period, coming within about 5 minutes of each other.
Yeah, both in four-on-four situations.
And I thought that the killer goal was the Jacob Trouba goal that happened in the third period that made it 4-2 for the Winnipeg Jets. And I thought Jacob Trouba was very good. And if you remember, he coughed up the puck in the first period, which led to the breakaway chance for Jori Lehterä. And Andrei Pavlik made a big save there. And then he made another big save on Tarasenko, the glove save late in the first period. I think there was about 20 seconds left.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Andrei Pavlik was incredible, guys. And, you know, he plays really well. He lets in 3 goals, but I wouldn't fault him for any of the goals. The first goal by Steen, you know, was a deflection off of Josh Morrissey's skate. Tarasenko's second goal was a very nice shot. We know that Tarasenko's a sniper. And then, you know, the third goal, it's a bit of a crazy bounce. Yeah. And the goal is pretty meaningless. You know, Petrangelo, scores.
As meaningless as it was, I think every Jets fan was quite happy to see the linesman botch the icing call immediately afterwards, because otherwise they got that puck in deep pretty quickly, and things might have been a little bit nerve-wracking for Jets fans for the last 12 seconds of the game. But once the linesman botched that call, it was a moot point at that point. But you're absolutely right, Ezzy. Andrei Pavlik's numbers aren't going to look good after last night's game, a sub 900 save percentage.
Yeah.
But anybody who is finding an overwhelming fault with Andrei Pavlik's game last night is just has blinders on. He was solid. You mentioned the save he makes on the Laterra breakaway. Well, if Laterra scores there, it's a 2-0 St. Louis Blues game, and it's probably an entirely different game. Had a couple nice saves on Tarasenko. He had a big pad save. I can't remember on who that was on. I think that was in the second period. Andrei Pavlik made key saves at key moments for the Jets last night, and the Jets put 5 past Jake Allen, or 4 plus the empty netter past Jake Allen. And so it's rare this year that you can say that the Jets had the better goaltending, but last night it was clearly a night that they did.
Yeah, and sometimes what's the only shot that really matters?
The save you make.
The win, right? Yeah. And of course, you touched on nerve-wracking. Yesterday during the game when it was 3-1 Jets and they had all those opportunities, especially that yawning cage by Dustin Byfuglien, and he missed. And then all of a sudden, the botched coverage, which we've seen like clockwork almost every game so far, where the Jets will botch the coverage at some point. And I don't know what Dustin Byfuglien was doing on that Tarasenko goal. And then, of course, the roof jobs it, between a couple of guys. You're not going to make that save unless it just hits you.
Well, Tarasenko is an elite scorer in the league.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So you go from 3-1 with a couple of missed opportunities, then all of a sudden 3-2, and then are you thinking, uh-oh, here come the Jets?
Yeah, here come the Jets that you're used to seeing, where the collapse is, the collapse is next.
Yeah.
Yeah, and to their credit, they came out in the third period, and Nikolaj Ehlers in the intermission interview, at least the one on TSN3, the one I caught with Dennis and Shane, spoke about how important it is for them to still be the aggressor in the third period.
Yeah.
And how important it is that they not sit back and let the Blues take the game to them. And again, fully to their credit, it's a good bounce on the Trouba goal, but they were still putting a lot of pressure on the Blues. It's not like they were sitting back and they got this break and thank God, because the Blues were coming in waves.
Push the pace.
Yeah,
they push the pace. They don't really give you an inch, and at the same time, you're trying to take advantage of an opponent that entered that one with only 5 wins through a dozen. Kind of crumbling here post New Year, and who knows where the Blues are going to end up here in the next month or so, especially with what's going on. Maybe they'll get that little dead cat bounce with Mike Yeo coming in. Who knows? But the Jets kind of touched on wanting to go in there, lunch buckets, workmanlike attitude, and they did just that. It was pretty at times, and at times it wasn't pretty, but you just get out of there, grab the W, and try to repeat that performance tomorrow in Big D, and then try to get on some sort of a roll here so that you can maybe stay in that conversation for the postseason.
Yeah, and I thought Trevor Kidd made a really good point on Hustler Lawless, talking about how the Jets responded to adversity in that game. They give up the first goal early in the first period, and they played really well in that first period. The second period was a bit of a letdown period, even though after 40 minutes they have the 3-2 lead. But in that third period, you mentioned Jacob Trouba's goal. It goes off of Alex Petrangelo and gets past Jake Allen there, but the point is that they kept up that level of pressure the entire game. And, the Winnipeg Jets right now, they can't afford to lose these games in division. It's remarkable, guys, that the Jets are 12-4-1 against the Central Division. And, they've beaten Chicago 4 times, and they own St. Louis right now. And they've been really good against Dallas as well.
7-0-0 against St. Louis and Chicago. 9-1-0 when you include the Dallas numbers. I mean, if you'd said that the Jets' record, like you said, in the Central Division would be 12-4-1 at this point in the season, and then you said they're out of the playoff spot, you probably would think that that's crazy talk.
And that's been their undoing, right? Last year, what was it, 11-16-2?
In division.
And then they missed the playoffs.
Right.
The year before that, I think it was kind of the opposite, maybe 16-11 and something.
They were good in the division,
You've got to be good at home and good in your division. And so far, I mean, what, they're 13-11-1 at home, and but they're killing it in the division right now. They're almost still in this playoff race just because of their divisional play.
Well, and it goes to their – and they're fortunate that this is a down year for the Central Division, where the teams that you expected to be up at the top of the division, the Dallas Stars and the St. Louis Blues, namely, are struggling.
Is it a down year, or is this maybe just what's going to start happening here moving forward?
Whatever it is. I mean, yeah. We, you know, time will tell on that one, and it certainly could be that one because you look at
I'll answer that. It's absolutely a down year.
But I think what Joel's saying is it down year, and the trajectory for the division is downward facing for next year and the year after. And I don't think so. I think if the Blues goaltending, if they can shore up their goaltending, then they're fine, I think, going forward.
Yeah, and no one can predict what's going to happen in the next 2 or 3 years, right? But
no.
You can certainly see the rise of the Metropolitan Division, and you can see the rise of the Pacific Division. But when you're talking about this Central Division this year specifically, I don't think much people expected the St. Louis Blues to be in the position they're in right now, firing Ken Hitchcock, or Dallas kind of, you know, having to scratch and claw their way into a playoff spot. I mean, a lot of people were predicting either Dallas or St. Louis to be in the Central Division lead. So right now, even though the Jets have yet to win 3 games in a row, we've got 29 games left here, and they're right in the thick of the playoff race. So, you know, good on them for responding to those 2 losses at home. You know, they've defeated 2 good Central Division teams right now, even though they might not be, you know, where they'd expect to be in relation to the Winnipeg Jets in the standings. But it wasn't a beautiful game. I agree with you, Joel. But, you know, the way they played, staying out of the penalty box, really fighting for every inch on the ice, Pavlik coming up big several times. You know, you say, you know, he only gave up 3 goals against the St. Louis Blues. But, I mean, this St. Louis Blues team, guys, was very desperate. They're not playing very well. So even though maybe that effort level could have been better, I mean, this is still a good team that needs wins. So you got to give the Jets a lot of credit for the way they played. But like you said, Joel, they have to win 3 games in a row at a certain point. And Dallas is another team that's playing really well right now. They scored 6 goals against Toronto last night. So
yeah,
it's not going to get any easier. I realize they've been very good against the Central. But, you know, you look at a team like the Colorado Avalanche on Saturday afternoon, they're going to want to play spoiler.
Yeah. And, I mean, right now, I say 3 in a row. Why not keep rolling? I mean, they have a break. The schedule is not taxing on them right now. They're fresh off a break. They played last night. They get a day off today where they just skate for a bit, play tomorrow. Then you're back at it on Saturday. I mean, the schedule is in their favor right now. They had that meat grinder in the first half. A lot of teams are going through that right now.
Sure.
They're going through that, you know, 16 and 30 or whatever it is, you know, 14 and 29. Teams are going through that right now. So the Jets have a lot of things in their favor right now to try to make a run. Now it's just up to them to make it happen.
Absolutely. I mean, they don't, you know, because of the fewer number of games that they have left, you can't say they control their own destiny.
No.
But
if they keep winning.
Yeah. One, keep winning. That's a good starting point. And two, you're right. The schedule is not taxing. So for all these other teams that are, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens with all these other teams when they go through what the Jets went through in November.
Yeah.
When they have to play, you know, every second night, or they're playing, you know, 26 games in 30 nights or whatever the numbers worked out to be. And that'll be where you see if this, you know, if March matters for the Jets. Yeah. If you figure that by the time the Jets bye week comes and goes, if they are still either on the cusp of a playoff spot.
Yeah.
And by cusp, I mean 1 point, not 4 points with 5 teams in between them.
Yeah.
Because every team is on the cusp of a playoff spot for the most part. But when March hits, if the Jets are really sniffing that playoff spot, really sniffing it well, then you're going to know that the next 5 weeks of games where pretty much every team is caught up, that's really when it's going to be a very interesting race to the stretch drive.
It makes me wonder if the league is going to want to change this bye week rule to avoid having teams with, like, what, 5 games in hand?
Well, I think I saw something today, and I think it was from Pierre LeBrun. It was from one of the TSN insiders. I think. Don't quote me on that for sure. But I think it said that next year they might look at maybe the entire Eastern Conference gets their bye week the same week, and then the entire Western Conference gets their bye week, you know, a different week, so that you don't go through this situation where, you know, especially in the East, they're, you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs have and the Ottawa Senators have 5 games in hand on the Boston Bruins. Well, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
For February 1st to have 5 games in hand on your opponent, that's bad scheduling by the league, and I think they'll probably look to reduce that number next season.
Like, in terms of the placement of your bye week, the Jets have it at the perfect time.
As long as they're not out of it by then.
You know, right now they're fresh off the All-Star break, 11 games until the bye week, 10 now.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a perfect time. If they can make some sort of a run, then all of a sudden put your feet up a little bit, recharge, refuel, and then continue to push. But, of course, like you say.
The flip side is that you're already out of it by that time, and it doesn't matter. But we'll know. We will certainly know by the end of February where they stand. Let's go to break. When we return, we'll talk about tomorrow's game in Dallas. The Stars are the opponent. We talk about it next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. That hat trick from Patrick Laine, the last time the Jets and Stars met on November 8th, which will forever go down in history as the day the world probably started to end, but we'll talk about that. Probably won't talk about that. We'll save that for our politics show. The Jets and the Stars tomorrow night in Dallas. The Jets 2-1 on the season against the Stars. Stars and Jets battling for a playoff spot in the Western Conference. Both teams tied with 52 points. The Dallas Stars, of course, two games in hand. Dallas only won 21 games this year of the 51 they've played. They have 10 overtime and shootout losses, which I believe leads the entire NHL, if I'm not mistaken, tied with the Florida Panthers. So really, it's those bonus points, those loser points, keeping the Dallas Stars in the race. A lot of similarities, though, between the Jets and the Stars, I would suggest. High offense, good talent.
Bad penalty kill.
Bad penalty kill and shaky defense. Sort of sounds familiar. Mirror images of one another. Yeah. Going to be an interesting game tomorrow night in Dallas as these two teams reacquaint themselves with one another.
Well, the thing is, too, is that a lot of their players are starting to get deployed out of sick bay. The Stars, of course. Minus 19 is what they are in the goals for, goals against. That's a, you know, what were they last year? Something like plus 30, I don't know, almost 40. I mean, they were just crushing teams last year on the scoreboard, and they've been trying to do some of that too this year by, you know, kind of getting rid of their defensive responsibilities, thinking they can just outscore teams. But of course, that didn't go anywhere in the early stages of the year because they had all these injuries. But now these guys are starting to get a little bit healthier, and they're filling the net a little bit more. So certainly not an opponent that you can gloss over, but based on how they're ranked 30th in the PK, if the Jets can maybe coax them into a few penalties and maybe the Jets can snap their skin on the PP, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, Ehlers had the power play goal last night, and the Jets' power play is,
I just meant to get it wrong.
No, no, I understand what you're saying. Yeah, totally. But the Jets' power play, you know, very quietly, is really beginning to move up the ranks in the NHL and becoming what really fans would think a power play with that amount of talent on it is really should be, which is a scary power play to go against. Like, you know, when you think of the Washington Capitals and you think of Ovechkin, oh, God, you can't give Ovechkin a power play sitting there at the top. And the Jets' power play with Laine and with Ehlers and with Bufflin and with Wheeler and with Little and with Scheifele, of course, not all playing at the same time. It's quietly sort of climbing the standings to be a real threat to opponents.
Yeah, the power play has certainly improved since the beginning stages of the season. And as you mentioned, Drew, I mean, you have a lot of dangerous players there. Patrick Laine, Nikolai Ehlers, we saw what they did yesterday. Both of those players scoring goals and, you know, having Brian Little in the lineup, you necessarily don't think of him as a, you know, power play specialist, but I mean, he missed 20 plus games and he has really contributed to a strong power play for the Winnipeg Jets. And then you have Dustin Byfuglien's rocket from the point. You know, Jacob Trouba has found his offensive game since, you know, the beginning of the season when he missed, you know, the first 12 or 13 games. So, I mean, this Jets team right now, you have the Dallas Stars twice in the next six games, and these are huge games. And you know, the Dallas Stars are one of those teams the Jets are fighting with for that last playoff spot. You know, the Calgary Flames are in there. The Los Angeles Kings are in there. So, I mean, the Dallas Stars right now, I mean, similar to the St. Louis Blues and similar to the Winnipeg Jets, you know, the big Achilles heel for this team has been the goaltending. And, you know, Antti Niemi and Kari Lehtinen struggled big time in the playoffs last year, and that was one of the reasons why they didn't advance into the later rounds. And, you know, that has hurt them quite a bit. And, you know, we've speculated, you know, whether or not the Dallas Stars were going to go acquire a goaltender.
Still might. Still should.
I think they will. And there are certainly a number of goaltenders out there, not just Marc-Andre Fleury or Ben Bishop. You could throw in Yaroslav Halak as well. So, I mean, the Dallas Stars, you know, they're still scoring their goals, but this team, guys, was absolutely decimated by injuries early in the season.
Sure.
And, you know, you're talking about Jason Spezza. You're talking about Patrick Sharp, Yuri Hudler, Cody Eakin. For me, the biggest difference between this year's Stars team and last year's Stars team is I don't think the defense is as strong, so they've depended on guys like like Esa Lindell and, mm-hmm. and Steven Johns. I think they miss guys like Chris Russell. They miss Jason Demers, a very underrated defenseman that was acquired by the Florida Panthers. So, you know, this team has not only had mediocre goaltending, but I think they've had mediocre defensive zone coverage. I mean, Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn, I mean, these guys are still point-a-game players.
Yeah.
You know, maybe Jamie Benn isn't at the same level as he was the last couple of years. He still got 42 points.
Yeah, and he missed a few games, obviously, right. earlier in the year. He was also banged up a little bit. But you're absolutely right, though, Ezzy. They're tremendously threatening. I think to your point about the defenses, they thought that their young defensemen were ready to step in and really play a significant role, and almost a lot of them all at the same time is what they thought, and it hasn't worked out that way. I mean, they probably regret not trying to get one of those veteran guys under contract just to insulate their young defensemen a little bit more.
Yeah, John Klingberg struggled in the early stages. Wasn't he a healthy scratch a couple of games too? I mean, to your point, you need to flank these guys with the veteran presence, you know, and also just to stabilize your in-zone play, because when you watch them play and they're trying to put 4 or 5 goals in, but that's often how it's going to break down. It's the defensive zone coverage when you have these young guys, not to mention the goaltending has been a little suspect, especially for the front half of the season.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned John Klingberg, Joel, who obviously had an amazing season last year in his second year in the NHL. They went out and they acquired a Dan Hamhuis on the left side. He's struggled at times. I mean, when you have a defense that is struggling and two goalies that can't stop the puck, I mean, right now, Kari Lehtinen is getting the majority of the starts. Antti Niemi's numbers have been horrible. They've been, you know, Jake Allen-like. So, I mean, when you look at, you know, this team, I mean, just because you have 5 or 6 elite scorers, and, you know, you could throw in Jason Spezza up there with Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn, and, you know, Patrick Sharp, after missing a bunch of games, he started to pick up his play. But, I mean, this team right now, I mean, they're not in a position where they can afford to lose this game, just like the Winnipeg Jets. So, I mean, these two games between the Jets and Stars, I think, are really going to show us who's going to maybe walk away with it here.
Well, you know, from the Jets' perspective, right now they are still, you know, there's three teams between them and the last wild card spot, the Stars, the Flames, and the Canucks. What the Jets really need to focus on, as much as wins, is being able to sort of leapfrog over those teams. You want to be you can't make a chase to the playoffs by having 3 or 4 teams between you and the playoff spot. You need to be, you know, the team that's right at the door of the playoffs.
Right.
And it starts tomorrow night in Dallas. If you win tomorrow night, granted the Stars will have games in hand still, but you leapfrog over the Dallas Stars. So it is the proverbial 4-point game in that this, you know, the Jets can open up the paper the next day, or they can go on TSN.ca the next day and they can say, hey, look, there's one fewer team between us and a playoff spot.
What do you think they need this year? 29 games remaining. Are we looking at, another 19 wins if they actually want to get in there?
18, 19, that's what we sort of speculated on Saturday's show. Is that
90 points-ish?
They're going to need some combination of 38 points,
about
right?
That.
They're at 52 points. We expect the playoff line in the West to be 90. By the way, I don't know if you guys have looked at the Eastern Conference standings. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah.
You know, there are 12 teams, maybe even 13 or 14 teams that are competing for 8 playoff spots. It's incredible.
They're really competing, what I would say, in the Atlantic Division. If you're in the Atlantic Division, you're still alive.
Right.
It's the Metropolitan, I mean, everybody else, the other Metropolitan Division teams, the Panthers, the Islanders, you know, are really competing for that last spot with Philadelphia, because nobody's catching the Rangers, the Penguins, the Blue Jackets, and the Capitals, or the Habs in the Atlantic Division.
Yeah,
everything else is up for grabs.
And here comes that, you know, the games in hand thing, right? The Islanders only 3 points behind them, and they have 3 games in hand on the Flyers, and
they're
on a little bit of a heater right now since Doug Weight took over. He's certainly pushing the right buttons.
Of course, they won't have a place to play the playoffs. Unfortunately, they're just going to have to play it on the Hudson River. They're just going to hope it's a really cold April.
What an absolute mess.
We'll talk about that later on in the program. From the Jets' perspective, likely, I'm going to throw it out there, that likely Matthew Perreault will be back in the lineup.
Yeah.
He took another full practice today with the team in Dallas. So by the sounds of it, he's likely to return to the lineup. And Andre Pavlik going to get another start for the Jets. Paul Maurice, sort of, from your perspective, you think he's sort of a win and keep going?
I think so at this point, yeah. He touched on it again today, whether you subscribe to this, but he says that he brings some confidence to his group, right? And, you know, some people lampoon that thought, but he just says that the way he calms things down, and even yesterday after he allowed that quick one right out of the gate, he said the guys on the bench, there was a different mood You know, whereas maybe with the other guys, sometimes after they allow that quick one, you think, oh, here we go again, right? They're going to allow some more. So I think at this point, it's a win and you're in. And Pavlik, I'll say this, if he wins again tomorrow night.
Start him on Saturday.
You don't want to let Connor Hellebuyck sit too long, but I think you got to keep rolling with him, don't you?
You know, at least it's a good problem to have, considering the previous problem was the Jets don't have a goaltender who can make a save. So at least they have a little bit more confidence in their goaltending, and Hellebuyck has got to be feeling better about himself after that victory in Chicago right before the All-Star break, where with 38 saves or whatever the number was.
Yeah.
So the Jets now have two goaltenders who aren't lighting the world on fire numbers-wise, but at least have a little bit more confidence in going out there and being able to make saves to help their team, which is, I think, a huge difference, obviously. Matthew Perreault, obviously, it looks like he's going to be ready to come back. Do you put him back where Andrew Kopp is with Scheifele and with Wheeler? Or do you maybe put Perreault down, play him with maybe Patan and I would assume Tanev, or, you know, and taking Thorburn out of the lineup? Or how do you sort of think Paul Maurice will handle that as?
I think Andrew Kopp has played really well on that second line with Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler. So I don't know if you necessarily want to break up that chemistry. So I would probably start him on that third line. I actually haven't really liked the way that the Adam Lowry, Sean Mathias line has played the last couple of games, even though the Jets have won their last two games. So maybe you start Matthew Perreault on that third line. You also have Drew Stafford coming back relatively soon. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do. And, you know, I would expect it to be probably Tanev or Thorburn that comes out of the lineup if Perreault is ready to go tomorrow night.
And sometimes putting him on that third line, a little bit more of a checking role, it's a little bit more conducive when you have a busted thumb, right? Because, you know, stick handling, I'm not sure where his cast is, how it's set up, but I've certainly had the busted thumbs when you're trying to do that, and it's a little bit more awkward when you're trying to, you know, do give and goes and that kind of stuff. So if he's with Scheifele and Wheeler, you know, Kopp's playing well, you don't want to have a guy out there who's unable to make the proper plays at the right time, but you still want to get him out there just for his hockey smarts. So I would maybe start him up on the third line.
Craig Ludwig, Dallas Stars color analyst, joins us next for some perspective of the opposition tomorrow night. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. You know, sometimes in this business you make silly mistakes. I provided producer Alex.
All day, every day on this end.
Yeah, all day, every day. I provided producer Alex with Craig Ludwig's phone number, and he looks at me and says, "Really? A 204 extension?" I say, "What are you talking about?" I was like, "No, I had actually given I had given Alex your cell number instead, Ezzy, for some reason." So, you know, if you get a call from producer Alex, try to be Craig Ludwig in this instance, if you don't mind. Anyways, Al is working to get Craig Ludwig on the program. Going to join us momentarily. Should mention that this segment of the program brought to you by Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program Craig Ludwig. Craig is the Dallas Stars color analyst. Craig, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, hey, how are you doing?
Doing very well, Craig. How about yourself?
Oh, good, good.
That's good. You know, Craig, here we are sort of after the All-Star break, and I would suggest, you know, for fans both in Winnipeg and for Dallas, you know, probably a little disappointed with how the first 50 or so games of the season have gone for both teams. Both teams out of the playoffs. The Stars, of course, defending Central Division champions. The Jets, you know, four players in the top 26 in scoring. You would hope that they would have had a better results. From being around the Stars team, you know, since the All-Star break. So yesterday they have the victory over the Maple Leafs, a practice today. Do you get the sense just in the dressing room that the players know now is sort of crunch time, that the next, you know, 10 or 15 games will really make or break the remainder of the season?
Yeah. You know, I know personally our group has said that probably three times this year, you know, where there was a homestand and then there was a road trip and that needed to be important and the next one needed to be important. And I think, fortunately, at least for the Stars, is a lot of the West seemed to be kind of fumbling around, you know, with the exception of a couple teams at the top. Everybody's been kind of hanging around, waiting for the other guy to slam the door open. And but I think that the feeling here is that the game is starting to come for certain players, individual players. I think there's obviously been a lot of talk all season long here about the injuries that the guys had in the beginning of the season, and you know that's behind them right now. And there's always a certain period of time, and I don't know what that is when you what you allow to a player to get up and get as close to 100% as you can. And I think we're starting to see that a little bit more. And I think they're optimistic right now. And I, you know, and again, we're not a team here this year that has been able to put a win on top of a win on top of a win. And it's kind of, and it's why when you look at the record, you're at 500 or a game at 500. And now you try to push it to a couple games at 500 or above 500. And then all of a sudden you stumble and you're back down to 500 again. So, you know, but I think there's some positive signs and a couple lines that seem to be clicking, a couple players on each line that have found some chemistry together. And I think that's what is so optimistic about what's going on right now.
Craig, how would you assess this current group of defensemen for the Dallas Stars? There was a lot of turnover from last year, guys like Alex Goligoski, Chris Russell, Jason Demers, they aren't here this year. So what do you make of this group of defensemen so far this year?
Young. And I think along with young comes mistakes and learning the game. And you know, the guys that you mentioned, I think maybe the most important one was Alex. And important in the sense that, you know, when John Klingberg came into the league, he was like, wow, where's this guy coming from? And he's the second coming. And then I know that there was a stat early in the season where Klingberg was coming up on, I think it was 100 assists, and he was going to end up being the quickest defenseman here, at least for Dallas, to get to that number. And I started thinking about it. You know, for 150 or 140 of John Klingberg's games that he's played in the NHL up to that point, he's probably looked over and seen the same guy for about 120, 125 of them being Alex Goligoski. And so for him personally, the season started out where, you know, I think game one was Jordy Benn. Game two may have been Dan Hamhuis. And then it was Nemeth. And so, you know, not only not having a lot of games under your belt, but it's important for all defensemen to kind of have a, you know, to have a lot of things in common with your partner. So that got settled down a little bit, and they made a decision that Esa Lindell was the guy that was going to be his partner, and then all of a sudden those two guys were pretty good together. But I think with that being said, you look at Lindell and Honka's in the lineup now, Steven Johns, who had a real good playoff last year alongside of Johnny Oduya. You know, he's kind of hit some speed bumps, but that's what happens when you go around the league once or once and a half, and all of a sudden teams know who you are, coaches know who you are, players know who you are, and you start getting your name circled on a board, and you're going to have to fight through different things, and you have to change parts of your game. And I think especially for Klingberg, it's been a learning season for him. So Honka's going to go through it. Steven Johns is going through it. So now all of a sudden, you know, you got a young player, a young defenseman on each grouping. So that's probably been the biggest challenge for the guys and you know, they're targets. There's no question that when you go up against this team, I can promise you in the other room, John Klingberg's number is probably circled. And it'd be the same thing I would do. And if he's the guy that exits the zone, you know, the easiest, most effective player back there, make it difficult on him. Do something different. Same with the forwards. I think last year, teams were probably playing not to get beat by the Dallas Stars at their speed, so they've changed their thought process, and it's been a little bit difficult this year to come through the neutral zone and enter the offensive zone with the same kind of speed, and they've had to make adjustments, and that's what the game is all about. And the young players, they learn as they go. So, you know, it's coming, and we can see that. We can see signs, and that's kind of what management, they knew they had to get the young guys in, and they're giving their chance now.
You mentioned the youth. Does that explain their PK, ranked 30th right now? I mean, what's going on there, and how can they tighten that up to start collecting some more wins down the stretch here?
Wow. wow, wouldn't we try to figure that one out? you know, obviously the one is always do your best to stay out of box when things aren't going that well. But that doesn't happen in today's game. There's a number of penalties that are called in the game. And so, you know, I think it's about pressure for me. I don't think you can sit around and wait. I think you got to put as much pressure on teams as you can. And in order to do that, it's got to be a four-man unit. And I think there were stretches where they went through where they were trying to do that, but they weren't going in harmony with each other. And you'd see the first guy going, the second guy might take his time a little bit. And by the time he got to where he was supposed to be going, the puck was already moving past him. And, you know, one of the two last night, they only had two. That was the good news. They only ended up killing a couple of them last night. So one was real good. The second one, it was about 85-90%, but unfortunately, when you're playing against the number one road power play in the league, and they got some skill in Toronto, they made them pay. But, and you know, there's other times that sometimes you just have to say that particular power play at that time, you got to give them credit for it. But, and then at the end of the day, we all know who's the best, the most important penalty killer out there. That's your goaltender. So unfortunately, I think for the coaching staff, it's not just one area. It's been maybe a save one time, and then it's been structure the other time. A couple of young defensemen making a wrong read, and so it's growing pains. But I think that if they stay with the pressure and get it to where you're moving in harmony, and when F1 goes, F2 is already on his move, and the first defenseman's moving from there, and then the second one, you take some of that time and space away, because you know an average player that has a little extra time and space can make a pretty good play. And then you take a good player and you give him that same time and space and they make a great play. And so I think that's really what they've got to get to where they can start to eliminate some of those great opportunities.
Craig Ludwig, our guest on NHL This Week. Craig is a color analyst on Dallas Stars broadcasts. Craig, I'm sure you've been asked ad nauseum about the goaltending situation. $10.4 million tied up between Kari Lehtinen and Antti Niemi. You know, the Stars really all year, even going back to last offseason, were, you know, rumored, you know, tied to various goaltenders who might be on the market. How do you foresee the Stars' goaltending situation playing itself out as we sit here a month before the NHL trade deadline?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. And again, I think that, to be honest with you, I don't think that the goaltending has been the major issue this year. I think last year, you know, they were able to outscore their mistakes, and you could give up two or three goals, and it wasn't a problem because the team was scoring goals left and right. But this year, with those young defensemen, there's been some better than quality scoring chances available for the opponents, and that's been part of the issue. And, you know, some of them chances are coming from real good areas that they shouldn't come from. But, again, we go back to structure and young D and learning to play the game. And how it plays out, I mean, I personally can see this team finishing this season at least with these two goaltenders. There's too many teams in it right now. I think that a lot of clubs feel that you need two goaltenders because of the compressed schedule and a lot of games and not as many nights. And but if you've got a good goaltender right now at this time of the season, I don't know who's going to be ready to give them up. Because they probably feel that they're, you know, on a team that's got an opportunity to get to a little deeper in the playoffs. And so if you've got a quality goaltender, I don't see how you're gonna move them. And I think that when you look at the number that the goaltenders are making here, and I think Kari is just over six and Niemi is between four and five, you know, you want to know what you're getting for that dollar amount, even though you're not going to pay that whole number at this time of the season or at the trade deadline. So, and then you got the expansion draft coming up, and so I think there's a lot of the decisions, and trust me, it's been a big topic around here for a long time, and I'm sure that management is spun in all different circles trying to figure out what they need to do. And when you're a club that's on the bubble, and I mean the playoff bubble, and you're hoping you get it together, I think sometimes you have to take a good look at your club, and you know, is this what's going to get us to that point? Is this what's going to get us into the third round, or you know, move on past whoever to get into the finals? And if that's not the move that you've got to make, maybe you just sit back and you hold tight and you start to listen. So, you know, I think in the next 10, 12, 14 days or so, you know, obviously it's going to sort some more things out for as you get a little bit closer to that trade deadline. And do you pull the trigger? Do you are maybe? And again, I don't want to put this on the goaltenders because I think they've been, for some of the opportunities that have been given, they've made some big saves. Even if you go back to last night's game, and, you know, Toronto put it up, I don't know what it was, 40, 43 shots last night. There weren't a ton of quality chances, but the ones that they got were real good. And Lettinen had to make some saves. And, you know, he let in three goals. And, you know, I think there was maybe one that he would like another crack at. But, you know, for the most part, that game at times, you know, at the end of it, I don't know if it was a 6-3 hockey game. You know, Toronto was not very good in the first period. The goaltending wasn't very good. Give up five goals. I'm sure Mike Babcock can put it a little bit more eloquent than I would, but they were awful. And, you know, if they would have gotten some goaltending, it would have been a completely different game. We just happened to spend a lot of time in their own zone last night, but then there were some chances given up, and our, you know, our goaltender made some saves to keep that game where it was. So it's a flip of a coin for me. And, I mean, it's a decision. I'm glad I'm not sitting up in that ivory tower that Jim Mill's sitting up that has to make that decision in a month or two.
Craig, Cody Eakin is a Winnipeg boy, so we have to ask about him. He missed the early part of the season with that knee injury. Why has he struggled so much offensively?
You know what? I think for Cody, I think it was hard on Cody. I think they expected, or he expected at least of himself, to be able to follow up from last season. And then that injury, you know, it seemed to hit all of our forwards at the same time and all of our top forwards. And I think it was disappointing for him. I think he expected a lot out of himself. And I think anytime you come back from any kind of an injury, especially one lower body, and I think Cody relies so much on his legs and his speed and his ability to skate and keep pace with the fast game that it is, I think he's a player that really relies on that. And he's a smart player, but he's got to play 200 feet. I mean, he's a real good player at both ends of the rink. And I think when you come back from any injury, especially in the middle of the season, and everybody's up and running, it takes time to catch up, and I think it kind of catches you off guard. You think you can come back, you feel you're ready to come back, and you know you feel great in practice, and it's just completely different. You're not getting leaned on, and you're not fighting corners and things like that. And the other thing is, I think that, you know, you get moved around, and that's the MO here, Lindy Ruff. Just because you start with this line doesn't mean you're going to finish with this line. He's real good at feeling the pulse of how the game is going, which players are going well, and at times you're going to get juggled around. And I think lately, you know, Cody's been with Patrick Eaves and Jamie Benn. And, you know, they get moved around a little bit every once in a while. And I think there's some stability there now, especially as the team seems to be coming along a little bit. I think Lindy will probably try to stick with what's been working and what he feels is, you know, keeping the guys running a little bit better than what they have earlier in the season. So, but he's a kid that I think he puts a lot of pressure on himself. And I think he wants to be a real good player. I think he wants to be one of the way that we're set now with Spezza playing on a wing. I think Cody looks at himself being a number one, number two centerman, and he wants to be good, and he wants to be good in both ends of the rink. And I think sometimes when you play with certain players that are of quality players, whether it's a Jamie Benn, a Spezza, Sagan, I think sometimes you try to do a little bit more. And I think you just have to play your game. You're with those players for a certain reason. I feel Cody's with certain players because they know what Cody can do in his own end of the rink. And that's where we've got to get better. And I think Cody's a big part of that, to be that guy that can kill penalties, win faceoffs, and play well in his own end.
Craig, we've got just one final question for you, and we really appreciate you coming on tonight. Of course, you won a Stanley Cup in 1999 with the Dallas Stars, and the head coach was Ken Hitchcock. What was going through your mind today when you saw that Ken Hitchcock was relieved of his duties by the St. Louis Blues?
Well, you know, I don't like it. I, you know, I've got a ton of respect for Hitch. I've been with the guy for a long time. I talked to him enough. I know it was hard on Army. Obviously, everybody's heard the interview, and I actually text Army, and I know that was a tough decision for him. They're great friends. They've been together for a long time. I can definitely see Hitch going down fighting and screaming in that office or wherever that meeting was taking place, because they think that Hitch is, you know, I've had some quality people in my life, my career from a hockey standpoint, and one of them being Bob Gainey and Larry Robinson, guys like that. And, you know, this is a game that I think we live in and we breathe this game. And there's no doubt in my mind that this game is the most important thing in Ken Hitchcock's life and career. And it means so much to him. And he does not like to fail at what he does. And I think that he's done so many things and tried to pull so many strings with this club. And after a while, it is what it is. And I've got nothing respect for the guy. Do I see him getting another job? Yeah. I don't know what else he can do. I just think he's a guy that lives and breathes the game. And whether he's the head guy behind the bench or he's some kind of a consultant, he's obviously going to be involved in the game one way or another. But it's a tough day for guys that, you know, you went to battle for. And I got nothing but respect for that guy.
Craig Ludwig is a Dallas Stars color analyst. Craig, really appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us on NHL This Week.
My pleasure, gentlemen. Have a great night.
Thanks a lot, Craig.
Take care. Let's go to break. When we return, we're going to talk about Brad Marchand. And more importantly, we're going to talk about the response, or lack thereof, from NHL Department of Player Safety. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. You're listening to NHL This Week, this segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, they're open. If you want to watch any of the Jets games on their 5 big screen TVs, check it out, Bernstein's Deli. Have an Illegal Curve Sandwich. Wash it down with a couple of cold brewskis. It's a good night. Nothing wrong with that. It's what I call a pretty good night right there.
Still haven't had one.
Wow. Joel Marcoux, tisk, tisk, tisk. You've been sitting in the studio with us for months now.
As he's promised me one for months. And
I promise you, Joel, that by the time the regular season is over, and you can put this on the board, I will bring you an Illegal Curve sandwich to the station.
I mean, the truth of the matter is you guys can just arrange a date and go there. Sure. You go and have one probably at least once a week.
No, I'm going to bring one to the station,
okay. Okay.
And I'm not going to tell you when I'm going to bring it, Joel. It's going to be a surprise.
Okay.
So you're going to be working here because you put in long hours here.
It'll be the unveiling.
Yeah, and it's going to be one of the days that you don't expect me to be here because, you know, we're usually here either on a Wednesday or Thursday or Saturday.
Sure.
So it'll be like a Monday or Tuesday. It's going to be the beginning of the week, and I'm going to bring one for you.
You're going to bring a beer, too?
Sure.
All right.
There you go. Match made in heaven right there. Right. Sandwiches and beers, Bernstein's Deli. Check it out, bernsteinsdeli.com. Brad Marchand, 3 games ago, slew-footed a member of the Pittsburgh Penguins. Pardon me, member of the Detroit Red Wings. The Pittsburgh game is the only game he hasn't slew-footed anybody.
Yeah, Drew was Nicholas Cronwall.
Right,
yeah.
Nicholas Cronwall. And as a result, he gets fined $10,000 for it. Probably very easily could have and should have been suspended for it.
I think it should have been a suspension.
It was pretty blatant. It was pretty... I mean, Cronwall is completely unsuspecting. Well, that $10,000 fine really taught Brad Marchand a lesson, because last night on Anton Strahlman, he went and did the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Slew-footing a player who was completely unsuspecting of it. You think now the NHL Department of Player Safety is going to throw the book at him. No supplemental discipline whatsoever.
Ray Ferraro had a great tweet. He said, if you clip somebody by accident, you always turn to see what happened. Marchand did not flinch.
You know what the biggest insult to injury on this play is? So Strahlman goes down because he gets slew-footed, and then because he's scrambling to get back into the play, has to take a penalty to prevent the Boston Bruins from having a good rush and a good scoring opportunity. So somebody talk to me. Tell me, justify for me, how Brad Marchand isn't getting any discipline for these two incidents from the Department of Player Safety.
Well, first of all, Joel's calling him Brad Marchand. You're calling him Marchand. I usually call him Brad Marchand, so I'm going to call him Brad Marchand, Drew. You can keep calling him Marchand.
Okay.
But the worst...
I'm going to start calling you Ezra from now on as well.
That's okay. The worst part about this, Drew, is that Brad Marchand is arguably playing the best hockey of his career. We know that he played on the top line of Team Canada... with Sidney Crosby and Patrice Bergeron at the World Cup of Hockey. He's got 21 goals, 51 points in 53 games right now. I mean, he is an elite scorer in the NHL, one of the top left wingers in the NHL. And I just don't know why he's doing that. Drew, he should absolutely be suspended for this. And the NHL Department of Player Safety has come out and said that he's not going to be suspended, and he should have been suspended, as we just talked about, for the slew foot on Nicholas Cronwall.
Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of Brad Marchand, Drew. I realize, especially out in Vancouver, you know, there are a lot of people that don't like the way he plays hockey, but the reality is he is a heck of a hockey player.
Anybody would want him.
Joel, he's 28 years old now. He's got to stop this. This doesn't need to be part of his game. If he wants to play a physical style of hockey, Drew, and he's not the biggest player, he's only 5'9", kind of like Brendan Gallagher, same type of player, but this slew-footing type of stuff, and Anton Strahlman, by the way, has had his own history, you know, with dirty plays, so I just don't think that he needs this to be part of his game. But in this particular case, I mean, he kind of disguises it, Drew, as an accidental kind of, tangling up between him and Anton Strahlman, but this was absolutely deliberate, and the slew foot on Nicholas Cronwall was deliberate as well. So I think it's ridiculous, and someone's going to get seriously hurt here.
The thing is, why would he stop if he's not getting suspended?
Yeah.
Right? You say he needs to stop this, and I agree, but why would he stop if he's not being suspended?
Well, why would Corey Perry stop being a dirty player until he gets called on the carpet for it? Until his actions hurt the team.
Like, you don't stop doing things until you get caught sometimes, right?
Yeah.
For me, I just think...
Keep stealing cookies from the cookie jar until mom slaps your hand.
Well, I would just keep stealing cookies until they stop putting cookies in the cookie jar, Drew. Yeah. But
there's no more cookies
But you know what I mean, though, Drew? I mean, like, why does this need to be part of his game? I mean, it has absolutely no impact on the result of the game. I mean... Make a hit. I mean, steal the puck, score a goal. I mean, as far as that goes, I mean, not only can someone get injured, but it's going to tarnish your reputation.
Well, his reputation, you know, for the most part, is pretty crappy to begin with because of his own actions. But this is a guy who had turned to a 40-goal scorer last year, valued member of Team Canada at the World Cup of Hockey, and he just comes out, and this is two in the last three games, and... for the life of me, I can't understand the logic in not suspending him for at least one game, you know, which is just as it would be as soft as I would ever think that they could be. And now he gets a $10,000 fine for the first one and nothing for the second one. Something's happening with Stefan Quenneville. He's got a different mandate than they used to have back at the Department of Player Safety.
Drew, you could argue that slew foot by Brad Marchand on Nicholas Cronwall should have been a 3-game suspension, let alone a 1-game suspension. So, I mean, a $10,000 fine. I mean, what's $10,000 to a guy that's making $6 million a year?
Nothing.
It's a bar tab.
It's a cup of coffee for the rest of us, or an Illegal Curve sandwich that you're going to buy Joel, something like that. Let's head to Edmonton. Coming up next, Dave Jamieson joins us. We're going to talk about the juggernaut, Edmonton Oilers. You're listening to NHL This Week, hour number two, coming up next on TSN 1290. Hour number two of NHL This Week starts now on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and Joel Marcoux. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend Dave Jamieson. Dave is a host with our sister station in Edmonton, TSN 1260. Dave, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Our pleasure, Dave. Brought you on to talk about the Oilers, of course, as we start the post-All-Star break portion of the schedule. You know, is there anyone in Edmonton, even with the highest of high expectations, that really believe the Oilers, here we are 52 games into the season, the Oilers would be right in the thick of a Pacific Division championship right now?
Well, it's Edmonton, right? So we think we invented hockey. there's lots of people who will say, oh yeah, no, I knew. No, very few people knew. I don't know if you had Connor McDavid doing what he's doing. I mean, obviously, he was going to be tremendous. He is tremendous. I don't know if people might have thought that, you know, a full season into the NHL, given what happened in his first year, you know, with a broken clavicle, that he would begin this year and do what he's done pretty much every night, last night being the exception. I don't know if people thought Cam Talbot would be as good as he is, that Leon Draisaitl would be to the kind of player that he is now, that Chris Russell, even though a bad night last night, would come in and do, or and no one would have predicted Patrick Maroon, and I'm not even sure Patrick Maroon would have predicted what he's done. So, you know, look, the people here are they're terrifically excited last night notwithstanding, but I think there's also a, you know, pinch me when all of this dream is over.
Yeah, Dave, we'll get to Connor McDavid in a second, and how can we not with him leading the league in points right now? You just mentioned Leon Draisaitl, and I remember last time we had you on, we were talking about Draisaitl. He had an incredible rookie year last year, but he's already got 20 goals. He's on pace for 30-plus goals. Why aren't more people around the NHL talking about just how good he is?
Probably because there's a guy named McDavid here.
Right.
I mean, like, it's, you know, he cast, David casts a long shadow. And you know, you saw it with the All-Star weekend. He was one of the featured faces. He played well in the game. And, you know, Draisaitl's only, you know, crime here is that he plays with on the same team as McDavid. Elsewhere, he would be celebrated more than he is. But I think, you know, I can't speak for him, but I think the Oilers might be okay with that, right? Because he came out of the World Cup. He had a terrific World Cup. And there, you know, there was some thought, okay, guys coming out of that tournament, maybe they have a slow start. He picked up right where he left off. And he has continued to, I always like to say about him, he looks like an old player. And by old, that's not a knock. It's just a guy who, even though he's very young and at the start of his NHL career, looks the way, because he plays with a poise and a confidence and a patience you might not expect for a guy who's, you know, what, 2 years in.
We know about the good so far. Oilers, of course, on pace to make the playoffs for the first time since 06. But what can we pick at? What's worthy of scrutiny right now, and will this inspire Pete Chiarelli maybe come deadline time?
Sure. Well, here's the thing we're picking at today in Edmonton is the play of, you know, last night coming out of a break. You know, and this is where fans and maybe some media think, okay, well, they've had time off. That's got to be a good thing, right? Because the more hockey you play, we as regular humans think that that, well, if you're not playing, you're resting, and that's got to be a good thing. Well, you know, Patrick Maroon said yesterday, I mean, we're playing so well. They were playing so well. Calgary, a win there and a big win and a physical win. They go down to California. They take two from the Sharks and the Ducks. They want to keep playing. Like, the Oilers players, like, we don't want to stop this. And we want to continue going, but it's an all-star break. And then they come out of it. And I wasn't surprised at the flatness of last night. I mean, this is still a team as good as it's been to this point. They're still learning. They're figuring all of this out. I mean, this is not your, you know, the Chicago's and the other teams who have been doing this, the Anaheims of the world, the LA Kings. You know, this is all new. There's only 11 guys on this team who have been to the postseason before. So, you know, for them to come out and not be hitting on all cylinders last night didn't surprise me necessarily. And Todd McClellan was pretty direct after the game. Yeah, we weren't good. We're not going to let this happen for two games in a row because they open up in Nashville tomorrow night. So there's, you know, this is a work in progress. And I think it's progressed more than people gave it, you know, had hoped for, even at the most optimistic. But now they're here. And, you know, you got a couple of options. Keep it going or stop.
Dave Jamieson, our guest on NHL This Week. Dave is with TSN 1260 in Edmonton, discussing the Edmonton Oilers. Dave, Jordan Eberle, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, both disappointing seasons. Both are sort of with the, let's call it the previous regime, you know, along with Taylor Hall, who obviously went to New Jersey in the offseason. You know, if Peter Chiarelli makes a move for one of them, we've heard both names bandied about, particularly Eberle's. Do you see him doing something between now and March 1st with either of these guys, or is that something that he might wait for the offseason again to do, not really mess with a good thing that they have going right now?
Well, I mean, that would be, would seem to make sense, but, you know, the last thing any of us should be doing, even though we do it for a living, is second guess guys like Peter Chiarelli and people who actually know what they're doing in terms of building NHL franchises or good ones.
Our shows wouldn't be very good if we stopped second guessing.
Yeah, we'd be left with very little to talk about. But all of that said, I think that, you know, I'd be more inclined to go with what you just said, is how much do you want to mess with this? And because given that it is year two, forget the 8 years that came before, or 9 years if you want to include last year, and just treat this as the first year of them getting it right, then, I mean, look, are you going to do a great deal? Or are you going to just do a good deal at the deadline? And Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, I think, is still very useful. And I think Jordan Eberle, if he's doing Jordan Eberle stuff, which is, you know, on pace to be a 25-goal scorer, which he's historically been in his career to this point. The problem with Jordan Eberle is if he's not scoring, you have to ask yourself, what is he contributing? Because he's not a physical player, obviously. Defensively, he's, you know, he's not particularly stout in that area. So if he ain't scoring, what's he doing? Ryan Nugent-Hopkins can do some other things as a center. You know, he's not bad in the faceoff dot, not great. Again, not a big physical force. So, you know, look, they are the previous regime for sure. Are they still useful parts? Absolutely. You know, the Oilers probably do, depending on who you listen to, need to address backup goaltending. They have Laurent Brossoit right now. Jonas Gustafsson was, you know, shown to be not sufficient at all. And then, you know, you're looking at some depth defense. Darnell Nurse isn't going to be back for probably another 5.5 weeks or thereabouts. So, you know, he's not going to be available to them. So do you go out and get, and what are you getting there? You know, everybody wants a right-handed shooting defenseman who can run the power play and has a great shot. Tell me how many of those exist in the world, and, you know, we can have a conversation.
Dave, you just mentioned the goaltending, and, you know, Winnipeg Jets fans are very familiar with Cam Talbot's goaltending. He has 3 wins against the Jets this year, including the Heritage Classic back in October. I mean, is that something that Todd McLellan and the coaching staff talk about, maybe overplaying Cam Talbot? Because right now he's on pace to start, 72, 74 games?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if they're having the conversation, I mean, obviously they're not sharing it with us, but I think that, you know, I guess Exhibit A in the can you overwork a goaltender, you can ask, Braden Holtby how that's going in Washington. And you can look at some other places. And, you know, we all have, I think, an idea in our mind, you know, of what's a perfect amount for a goaltender to play. And then we're not goaltenders and we're not coaches. And so we've got do you play 60 and you get 20 decent games from the backup? Or is it, you know, what's the mix, the perfect blend to get your guy enough time off from game action? And yet goaltenders, if you talk to them, they're better if they play more and they want to be in goal more. And so Cam Talbot's a guy who's been in the league, but he shouldn't be overworked. I mean, he did more watching than playing in New York behind Lundqvist. And last year he played a lot, but, you know, so he should be. He's the number one guy here and number one guys play a lot. So, you know, I think if the Oilers, look, I would be inclined, given the way he played, and he wasn't great last night. He didn't get a couple of big saves early when the Oilers needed him to make the big saves. Look, he's been largely terrific this year. Keep playing. What's the old line? I'll sleep when I'm dead. I'll sleep when the season's over.
Who's been a pleasant surprise for this team so far this season? Maybe a name we don't see atop the headlines.
You could look at Matthew Benning, a first-year defenseman. You could look at Drake Kajula, a forward who's been terrific. Matt Letestu, he's been excellent. He's chipped in with a lot of timely goals and really good ice time. Adam Larson, you know, the guy who came over in the Taylor Hall trade, has been, you know, Peter Chiarelli introduced him on the first day when the deal was made. As he said, he's not sexy. And you know what? He's right. He's not sexy. I don't think you'd find one person in Rogers' place who said, you know what, I spent $300 tonight to come to this game so I could watch Adam Larson. But at the end of the night, Adam Larson has been a part of or a reason why the Oilers won a game. And in some cases, you know, maybe why they lost. But he's been really, you know, bullish defensively. That's what he came as a hard-hitting, solid, dependable guy, lots of minutes, first pairing, shut down. Then he came as advertised, and I was a big Taylor Hall fan. I love the way that guy plays hockey. He's one of those rare players that gets me, you know, out of my seat. And but it didn't work with him. So Larson brings them some of what they needed, and they're better for it.
Dave, we'll let you go on this last question: Sidney or Connor? Not to put you on the spot.
No, I'm happy to be put on the spot. I mean, because we see Connor all the time. But here's the thing. you know, you've got new hockey, old hockey, and Sidney Crosby's hardly old, and he's hardly, you know, emblematic of what the old NHL was. He's very much here and now, and he's tremendous. He's amazing. You know what, Ed, can you go 1-1A? I mean, Connor McDavid's still got to
no fence sitting.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, Connor McDavid does more things on any given night than make me as a fan, not as the guy who's, you know, taking notes to complain the next day, who does more things to make me go, wow, than Sidney Crosby does. Yet, when you look at highlights, there's 87 doing what 87 has done for many, many years, which is win games, score goals, win cups. So, look, it's a hard one to have, because if they came into the league together, yeah, we can have that conversation, because you'd have a similar body of work. Look at it this way. We're in really good shape in terms of hockey right now, in terms, you know, in speaking of players that dazzle you. You've got one in your city. You've got a couple, Scheifele, Laine. You've got more, you know, go around the league. On most teams, there's a couple of young talents that you go, wow, I want to see this guy with half a dozen years under his belt.
Dave Jamieson is with our sister station in Edmonton, TSN 1260. Dave, always appreciate your time and your analysis. Thanks for doing this, buddy.
Take care, guys. Thanks a lot.
Take care, Dave. Let's go to break. When we return, we'll discuss the Blues firing of Ken Hitchcock. And Lou Korak joins us from NHL.com coming up at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to TSN 1290. This is NHL This Week.
I don't think that we've given our best effort, and ultimately Ken is he's paying the price for all our failures, starting with mine. I'm the manager.
Doug Armstrong, general manager. He is the manager, general manager of the St. Louis Blues, addressing the media earlier today after the Blues parted ways with head coach Ken Hitchcock. After the Jets, geez, you lose to the Jets, immediately get fired. I don't think that was precisely it.
Was it Lindy Ruff the last time back in 13?
In Buffalo?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
After a Jets.
I was trying to actually think about this. I was trying to remember this. I thought it was Randy Carlyle.
Yes, Toronto. After Toronto. The Jets on that Saturday night, they beat the Leafs 6-1 or something at home. They really took it to the Leafs a couple years ago. And then you're right. They dismissed Randy Carlyle right after
that. It's actually in your
game.
Contract. If you coach the Toronto Maple Leafs and you lose 6-1 to the Winnipeg Jets, you get automatically fired.
Also, in Edmonton, a couple years ago, who was their coach before McClellan? It was Dallas Eakins.
Well, they only had about six in 3 years.
But it was Eakins. I think he got fired after.
Yeah. Was it Ralph Kruger? Was it Craig Matavish?
Yeah. Remember? No. It was Eakins. Because remember that game where the Jets were down late in the third period? And then Trouba came in and scored to tie the game. And then the Jets won. I don't remember if it was in an overtime or a shootout, but I remember distinctly afterwards that I think the Oilers made that coaching change right after that game, because I remember being up in the press box and walking past the Oilers management booth.
Well, that would have been Dallas Eakins then, right?
Dallas Eakins. Yeah. And walking past the management booth, and I guess it would have been Kevin Lowe and Mac and Craig Matavish were just sitting there. This is 20 minutes after the game, sitting there silently, and obviously they were pondering dismissing their head coach, and I believe that's what they did right after that game.
Should we do it on Skype, or should we do it face-to-face?
No, fortunately, they did it face-to-face in this instance. They didn't do it on Skype.
Hey, they were tired of having a salad bar and fruit bar instead of donuts and coffee in the morning. Right?
Obviously, you know, Dallas, he had his little things, I suppose. Good AHL coach. We'll see if he gets another shot in the NHL.
Sure.
Regardless, the Blues dismissed Ken Hitchcock earlier today. I mean, the coach is obviously the easy guy to fire, and that's the old cliche. This it really strikes me as a situation that was made bad way in the offseason and finally came to a head earlier today.
Yeah, how often, guys, in the last, I don't know, 10 years, have we seen a head coach who announces that this is going to be his last year with a team, and then you have another coach come in, and he is the heir apparent to the head coach that is currently in power, right? I don't remember any time that ever happening. So Mike Yeo, after being relieved of his duties with the Minnesota Wild, I mean, we knew that he was going to become head coach eventually. I mean, I think the entire hockey world is shocked, and that's because Ken Hitchcock is one of the most successful coaches of all time.
Yeah, and about to pass Al Arbor if he gets another job.
Yeah, so, I mean, and you're talking about a guy who has that experience at the Olympic level and all of that. He's won two Olympic golds as an associate coach with Mike Babcock. So there are a lot of problems with the St. Louis Blues team. It's not just coaching guys. I mean, everybody knows that the goaltending has been very bad.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the shots against, I mean, the shots against are actually top five in the NHL. I mean, Jake Allen and Carter Hutton have not got the job done.
Yeah.
And they haven't been good. And, you know, they miss a guy like Brian Elliott. I mean, the St. Louis Blues guys had a top team save percentage last year.
Sure.
So what's happened? Well, I mean, Jake Allen hasn't been very good. You know, it's essentially the same group of defensemen with Alex Pietrangelo, Jay Bouwmeester, Colton Parayko, Kevin Shattenkirk. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, this team, you know, has had way too much turnover. I mean, the identity of this team, guys, think about the Blues 2 years ago with David Backes, Troy Brower, TJ Oshie. I mean, these guys were hard to play against. And, you know, right now, they're a team, I think, that is trying to find their identity. They're transitioning, you know, to more of a skill puck possession team. I mean, you've still got some guys that can throw the weight around, guys like Ryan Reeves. But, I mean, right now, this team has lost four of their last five games. They've lost to the Winnipeg Jets three times this year, including last night, where essentially they were in the game. And, you know, give the Jets credit. But I mean, as far as Ken Hitchcock goes, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he is either a head coach or an associate coach with another
Absolutely.
Team. We've talked about it off air, Drew. I mean, if the Las Vegas Golden Knights or the Florida Panthers come calling and offer Ken Hitchcock a two-year deal, I don't think he's going to turn it down. Oh. So, I mean, is Ken Hitchcock the scapegoat? Possibly. I mean, what can Doug Armstrong do right now, Joel? I mean, right now, the St. Louis Blues are only 1 point ahead of the Winnipeg Jets. They have a few games in hand. I think it's three games in hand on the Jets. But regardless, I mean, they're in danger of missing the playoffs.
Well, what can he do right now? How about look back on what he did? I mean, he's the guy who engineered this coaching maneuver. He's the guy who didn't bring back Backes. He traded Elliott, his goalie, to, you know, be locked and loaded with Jake Allen. He let the Shattenkirk cloud float over the team all season long. Who knows where he's going to end up? I wouldn't be surprised if now he gets flipped. I mean, Doug Armstrong, in that little clip going into the segment, says, you know, basically Hitchcock is paying for my mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And ain't that the truth right now?
Well, at least he was honest about it, which I give him credit for. I mean, I never understood the Mike Yeo plan. You know, Mike Yeo was a successful head coach for the Minnesota Wild, but did he strike you as a guy that you had to have as your head coach so much so that you wanted to bring him in a year earlier, that he was, you know, you needed to get this guy under contract that badly? I mean, I don't know. I didn't think he did a fantastic job with the Wild. I thought he did a pretty, probably, I'd say, above average, but you know, we were talking about this earlier. You look at the head coaches who are likely going to be available this offseason. You know, if things go bad in Boston, Claude Julien, you know, Jack Capuano, Gerard Gallant. I mean, there's going to be some quality head coaches available.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why you had to hit your wagon to Mike Yeo 12 months earlier.
And what has he done? I mean, that year where the Wild made that run, 27-9-2, that was just Dubnyk turning into a brick wall.
Mm-hmm.
What has he really done?
He was always seemed like he was on the verge of getting fired in Minnesota before it actually happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and guys, Doug Armstrong only has 1 year left on his contract, and I think that's significant. You know, Joel mentioned some of the moves he made, and maybe it's some of the moves that he didn't make, right? When you're talking about Brian Elliott, I mean, he's struggled in Calgary, but the point is they haven't had a veteran goaltender to pick up the slack when Jake Allen has struggled. Mm-hmm. I mean, Carter Hutton's a career backup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's okay, but he's a career backup. So similar situation to Winnipeg, I think, actually. You know, they decided to run with two inexperienced goaltenders. Michael Hutchinson's 26 years old, but he's never been a number one goaltender.
Sure.
So I think you can look at some of these moves.
I think they're shocked.
Kevin Shattenkirk, by the way, Drew, you know, you mentioned it. I think, you know, Kevin Shattenkirk has been, you know, the elephant in the room, because we know that Doug Armstrong has tried to trade Kevin Shattenkirk, but now you have a guy who you know isn't going to be there next year. Kevin Shattenkirk's a great offensive defenseman. I think he's gotten better defensively as well. But the point is,
you have a month to trade him.
Or do you lose him for free again like they did last year with a couple of guys?
It's the move that you didn't make, right? And as far as I'm concerned, I mean, you look at the St. Louis Blues. Vladimir Tarasenko is one of the best snipers in the entire league.
Mm.
And they have a lot of good players. Robbie Fabry, you see the save he made on Nick Batan yesterday, you know, prevented a goal there. I mean, Robbie Fabry, Jaden Schwartz, Alex Steen, Yori Lehterä is a good player. I mean, they have a lot of good players on this team. As far as I'm concerned, there's no excuse if this team misses the playoffs.
Well, you know, you can also add TJ Oshie into the equation of sort of players you lose for nothing in that they traded him, of course, to the Washington Capitals and for Troy Brower, and then they let Brower go for nothing to Calgary.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and, you know, Phoenix Copley, I guess, was also in that trade. So, yep. I mean, it's a little bit too soon to say if it's officially nothing. But right now, it's another player that that no return is currently helping the roster. You know, and Doug Armstrong's comments today, he fired Hitchcock, and then he really did throw his players under the bus. We have a team of independent contractors. We don't lose with pride. I mean, these are pretty bold comments that, you know, obviously he's trying to light a fire under his players, but if it doesn't work, to what damage does that do his relationship with the players entering the final year of his contract?
And guys, I mean, they do have some young players on this team. I mean, you look at Colton Parayko, he's a young defenseman, and Joel Edmondson of Brandon. I mean, you've got some young players, but essentially this is a veteran group, Drew. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a win-now team, right? So, I mean, this isn't a team that's going to rebuild in the offseason. And you wonder, is Doug Armstrong going to be part of this long-term with only 1 year left on his contract?
Well, you know, what's funny about the Blues is that, you know, all those sort of young players, they had that sort of that next wave of talent, the Robbie Fabry, the Jaden Schwartzes that were supposed to sort of take over from, you know, the Alex Steens or to fill in the gaps that, you know, a guy like TJ Oshie had or David Backes had. They've been good players, but they've really been more complementary pieces than they have been, you know, cornerstones. I mean, the cornerstone of this team is Tarasenko and, you know, Pietrangelo on the back end, but that next wave of offensive talent hasn't really come to the forefront. And so what you have in the Blues is sort of they're a bit of a mess of a team right now.
And that's why earlier when Ezzie was saying that this is an off year for the Central, which I agree with, but also is this maybe a sign of what's to come? And, you know, will this team just kind of slowly taper off a little bit? Because obviously we've seen them as a perennial contender for the last fistful of years. Mm-hmm. But to Ezzie's point, that identity is kind of evaporated a little bit. So I'm not sure if they'll get it back.
Well, if you had to pick a team with a greater upside, say the Blues or the Jets, I mean, there's no question about it. The Blues have Tarasenko, and he's a fantastic hockey player. But after that, you have solid players, nobody that's going to get you up off your seat, I would suspect.
Yeah.
And that's an interesting dilemma and an interesting, you know, what happens if Mike Yeo doesn't do anything over the next 30 games? You know, what happens if Mike Yeo, you know, comes in and they're the same team or they're a little bit worse?
Yeah, and all of a sudden there's a solid coach available in free agency.
And, you know, what of your offseason? What, you know, how much confidence can you have in Mike Yeo as being your guy? It's just a bizarre situation for Mike Yeo to have to step into, and it's all really of Doug Armstrong's making.
Yeah, Drew, just quickly here, I know we got Lou Korak coming up at the end of this segment, but it's going to be very interesting to me to see what happens with Kevin Shattenkirk and what kind of return do they get, because I think it's going to depend on where they are in the standings. Because
you have to trade him.
If you're in a playoff spot, you absolutely have to trade him. You can't lose him for nothing.
Regardless of where you are in the standings.
Yeah, and you could get a good haul for Kevin Shattenkirk. If they're in a playoff spot, I think they try to get somebody in return who can have an impact, whether that's a defenseman or forward. I would expect it to be a defenseman. But if you're out of a playoff spot, you know, do you try to get a first-round pick?
Well, aren't you just going to get the pretty much the standard going rate for a sort of the top pending UFA at the trade deadline? You know, a solid young roster player and a first round pick,
preferably somebody that you don't have to protect.
Yeah, somebody that. But everybody, nobody's giving. You know, I mean, Dano. I mean, that's you're getting Dano and a first round pick.
Yeah,
that's probably the going rate. I don't think you're not going to make a trade that completely turns around the fortunes of your team for the next decade or anything.
Unless they get a goalie.
Yeah, maybe. But then if you get a goalie, you're paying Jake Allen for the next 4 years, and that's not a real vote of confidence right there. Interesting times in St. Louis. Let's head to break. Lou Korak, the Blues NHL.com correspondent, joins us next to touch more on the firing earlier today of Ken Hitchcock. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN 1290. Twenty-five minutes before the top of the hour, welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team, or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. Check out their new showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program Lou Korak. Lou is the St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com. Lou, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us on what undoubtedly has been a busy day for you.
Yeah, it's been a busy one and a long one. never a fun day when, from a media perspective, when you say goodbye to a coach that's been good to us, a coach that's treated us well, and I always considered is quote gold for the media. Tough one to say goodbye to Ken Hitchcock, but here we are today.
Well, so Lou, you know, when the news broke, you know, in and around 8 a.m. Central Time this morning that the Blues dismissed Ken Hitchcock as head coach, you know, were you surprised or had you sort of seen the writing on the wall and then last night's loss to the Jets and more importantly, almost the effort level that they displayed last night sort of said, yeah, you could see this coming?
I think it kind of goes both ways. You know, we that have covered the team have been, you know, kind of murmuring about this for a couple of weeks now, wondering, you know, is the axe going to fall? If it does, when is the axe going to fall on the coach? Because, you know, it's kind of cliche-ish, but, you know, you can't fire an entire team. It's always easier to get rid of a head coach. It's not something I necessarily agree with, but that's the way these teams treat these situations. And you wondered when it was going to happen, but then, you know, when reality hits and it does happen, it is a little bit of a surprise. And I think that was kind of the mood in the locker room today. I think, you know, the players will never admit it, but, you know, they had to feel like something, you know, was going on, whether it was going to be, you know, Hitch losing his job or if somebody was going to get traded or something bold was going to happen, because something just hasn't been sitting right with this team for well over a month now. And, you know, when it finally did happen, there's a little bit of shock there. But then when you kind of it all sinks in and you absorb it a little bit, you kind of say to yourself, well, you know what? You kind of did see the writing on the wall here that something was going to happen. And I don't want to ever say that, you know, this was the easiest thing to do. But, you know, from a management and ownership standpoint, I guess this probably was the simplest way for them to try to shake something up, so to speak.
Lou, as you know, the St. Louis Blues' struggles in goal have been well-documented, and, you know, Winnipeg Jets fans are very familiar with those struggles. A couple of weeks ago, we saw Phoenix Copley here at MTS Center, and the Jets won that game 5-3. For someone who covers the team on a daily basis, how much of the Blues' problems can be attributed to goaltending?
A lot of it. And not necessarily, I'm going to sit here and say, you know, what's happened to this team that they've regressed this year is all on Jake Allen's shoulders. But you know as well as anybody that if you get bad goaltending, it tends to trickle. There's a trickle down effect to other players on the ice. And you know, when you have that rock solid standout goalie, even when players make a mistake, if you know your backbone is there and is going to bail you out, there tends to be a different mood on the team. But I just get the sense that, you know, and last year, these guys had the utmost confidence in that tandem with Jake Allen and Brian Elliott, and they were so good together when they pushed each other. I just didn't get that sense that, although they always said the right things, I just don't felt like that there was that trust factor in, you know, Jake Allen, or even whether it be Carter Hutton, two in goal, just making that, you know, big crucial save when you needed to have it, or making that outstanding save that kind of bails a teammate out after they make a mistake. So players tend to overcompensate and maybe want to do too much. You get out of your element, and it contributes to your defensive game suffering. So I just think that once all that started going down, it spread out to the five guys on the ice. And you guys have known, if you follow the Blues in the past, they've always been one of the stingier teams, especially under Ken Hitchcock here, and that's been one of the reasons why they've been a staple and have been a success, and you just haven't had that. And to me, that, you know, as far as the product on the ice, you know, it all starts to me with the lack of goaltending that they've got.
Is Doug Armstrong inching closer to the hot seat?
That's a good question. If he's not, I think he should be, because he's responsible for putting this team together. I mean, you know, like a couple of the players said, and I agree wholeheartedly, you know, a coach can only coach. Players have to go out and play. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, a coach can only take what you give them. And this is the lineup that Doug Armstrong gave Ken Hitchcock to work with this year. It hasn't panned out. It hasn't worked out the way they thought it would, because we all knew that once they lost David Backes and Troy Brower, you can even go to Brian Elliott and Steve Ott. These are four important veterans that were huge cogs to this team as to why they were able to make a run to the Western Conference Final last year. All of a sudden, you're void of that. Well, who's going to replace that? They felt like they were going to, there was probably going to be a sense that there was going to be a little bit of a regression, but maybe not quite to this level. So to me, the general manager is the one that put this lineup together. If he's not held accountable, I think he very well should be.
Lou Korak, our guest on NHL This Week. Lou is the St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com. Lou, sort of along those same lines, have the Blues organization and Doug Armstrong, you know, obviously as the captain of the organization, have they lost too many players over the last couple of years without getting anything in return in terms of NHL talent that's still on the roster? I mean, you look at Backes, you look at TJ Oshie, who they traded to Washington for Troy Brower, then you lose Brower. You know, you trade Brian Elliott for a couple second-round picks that have, you know, still too soon to see how they pan out. Have they just been too many subtractions from the roster over the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, you used good examples of it there. And especially with, you know, the TJ Oshie, Troy Brower, I mean, all you have left out of that is, you know, you've got Copley down in the minors, and I believe there's a draft pick there that's still, you know, obviously, like you said, depending on, you know, the progression of the player, whether they're even going to pan out as far as NHL talent or not. So, yeah, I mean, you've got TJ Oshie. Look what he's doing in Washington right now. And, you know, he was kind of the fall guy there after the collapse of the playoffs after they lost in the first round to the Minnesota Wild a couple of years ago. So, yeah, they're, you know, you have nothing ready-made with that anymore because Troy Brower has since moved on. You got nothing in return for him. You got nothing in return for your cap, you know, your captain of the last 5 years and who's been a homegrown guy in your organization for 10 years. Yeah, and Brian Elliott, Steve Ott, I can just keep going on and on down the line here with those guys. And, you know, they've tried to replenish them with young talent, talent that they've drafted. And I think they've done that with a couple of good pieces with Robbie Fabry, Jaden Schwartz, Colton Parayko, Vladimir Tarasenko is one of their own as well. So, I mean, I understand these are guys that you've had, but, you know, these guys are going to continue to get better. But as a whole, if we're talking in the here and the now, no, you haven't gotten nearly enough in return for what you lost there. And I think that's why you've seen the regression here. I guess, you know, we can kind of look at this as it almost sounds like doom and gloom, but think about it, guys. These guys are—they still have a chance to make the playoffs. That's kind of the silver lining here, though. That they have been able to barely tread above water. They're still there, and it's tough sledding right now. But you know, for everything that happened today, you're probably thinking this is happening to a team that's a bottom feeder in the league, and you know is in a rebuild mode maybe, and has no shot at making the playoffs. So there's still something to be salvaged here, even for everything that they've lost, but it's just going to be really difficult right now considering the position that they're in. It's a completely different transition now going over to Mike Yeo and trying to ask a head coach to, you know, pull the reins in here and get things going in the right direction in the last 32 games, but they still have that in front of them. So I guess there still are attainable goals here left in this season.
Lou, what are the chances that we see Ken Hitchcock as either a head coach or an associate coach in the NHL next year?
You know, when he made the announcement last summer that this was going to be it for him, I was a firm believer in it. But as we've gone on, and especially with the way it ended here now, I'm under the firm belief. I won't go to 100%, but boy, I'm pretty close to 100% feeling like he's gonna resurface somewhere else. I mean, coaching is just in his genes. It's his lifeline. He knows. Well, I mean, he's a big history buff. We know that. I mean, he's very into the history of our world, and never makes that something that he hides from anybody. But coaching hockey is just what he's all about. Maybe he won't resurface next year. Maybe this is one of those situations too, like after you know, he got let go in Columbus, where maybe he does some you know, minor stuff, maybe some scouting stuff for an organization, and he'll get the itch again. But it could be one of those situations where he does jump into a situation right away, too, because he is 65 years old, so he's not getting any younger here. And, you know, when you start showing some of those tendencies that maybe you're ready to give it up, I've never heard that from him before. So maybe this is one of those situations where if he's going to take another job. But I don't get the sense that it's going to be a team. I know a lot of talk already out there that, you know, maybe he'd be a fit for the expansion Vegas Golden Knights, but I don't see that. If Ken Hitchcock resurfaces somewhere, to me it's going to be for a team that's kind of like the Blues were five, 6 years ago, on the cusp, and they just need somebody that's got that pedigree that can push that team over.
Sticking with the hypotheticals, what happens if this Mike Yeo experiment goes south? Has Doug Armstrong, has he hitched his wagon to this guy, or could we see another change in the offseason?
No, I think this is, I think you can almost make this a parallel to Jake Allen, because, you know, you've already heard all the talk that did the Blues make a mistake in, you know, throwing all their eggs into one basket when it comes to Jake Allen by giving him a 4-year extension before his contract expired this year. Well, they're committed to Jake Allen as their number one goalie, and they're committed to Mike Yeo now. They're going to give him a shot at this. I mean, when he signed his contract last summer, it was for 4 years with the understanding that the first was going to be an associate coach, and he's going to get 3 years as the head coach of this franchise. So they're going to give him a shot here. They're going to be patient with it. You know, this isn't one of those where he's going to have to succeed down the stretch here, or else you know, his job could be in jeopardy. That's not the case at all. There's a reason why they went out and got Mike Yeo. That's kind of why they went into this situation, which I didn't think was a good idea to begin with, having kind of one of those coach and waiting things. You just don't see scenarios like this playing out too well, but there was a reason why they went and got him, and this is one of those where they've got a long-term projected here, and I think they're going to stick with the course as far as that's concerned.
Lou, we'll let you go on this last question. Knowing what you know about the personalities in the dressing room, how is it going to play? Doug Armstrong's comments that, you know, the team doesn't lose with pride and that the roster is a bunch of independent contractors as opposed to a team. Those aren't the typical words you hear from a general manager, even in a stressful situation like they had today in St. Louis.
Well, I think that's just it. With the success that they've had, this is kind of foreign territory for them. And I just think that was Doug Armstrong's way of serving notice to the players now. I think it was a subliminal message, more of his way saying, okay, we should have your attention now. Nobody has been touched as far as player personnel is concerned. Now the spotlight is on you. And it's basically serving notice to these players that the onus is on you to get the job done now, or we're going to start purging the lineup. I think that's basically what that was all about. I don't know if that was exactly the best way to put it, but that was his way of serving notice that it's desperate times now. And, you know, this team, even though they expected to be a little bit of a regression from last year because they wanted to see how these young guys would be able to perform and thrust into some of those key roles, I don't think they felt like it was going to be to the point where they were going to have to fight for a playoff spot. So some very strong comments coming from the general manager today, and I think that's with the understanding that, you know, if it's not players that are going to change, it certainly could be his job that's on the line. So the message was delivered. Now it's up to the players to perform like they expect them to.
Lou Korak is the St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com. Lou, really appreciate your time this evening. Thanks very much for joining us on NHL This Week.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Our pleasure. Lou's appearance on NHL This Week brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. One final segment this Wednesday evening here on NHL This Week. Reminder, Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show will come at you an hour earlier than normal, 8 a.m. on Saturday morning, as the Jets will be in Denver to meet the Avalanche with a 2 p.m. puck drop. So Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 8 a.m. this coming Saturday. Of course, big show planned. It's our eight-year anniversary. 8 years on air.
Wow.
Coming this coming Saturday, believe it or not, because I certainly don't believe it.
Yeah, it's the Ocho Show.
The Ocho Show. In fact, I think that's where we're being broadcast live on TSN Ocho on Saturday.
By the way, guys, I don't know if you know, Roll Up the Rim to Win is back.
Yes,
and,
did you win?
I just went for a little walk, and this is my first Roll Up the Rim to Win cup, and I won a free coffee.
Wonderful.
How many coffees did you crush a day?
Probably two or three.
Nice, yeah. Same thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is my third of the day, and that's usually... You know, I was feeling, sometimes I have one in the afternoon, sometimes I don't.
Yeah, why not?
Today, you know, getting a little, you figure show day, getting a little bit of the headache, need to get rid of that.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah, third coffee of the day.
Well, Drew, make sure that you roll up the rim to win, because you never know, you could win a new car.
It's funny, my doctor is, you know, for whatever reason, is always, you know, one of his bugaboos, you know, is that, you know, oh, you have, how much coffee do you drink a day? And he's like, you know, one or two cups, something like that. And he's like, oh, with all the heavy cream and sugar and everything else, they're thinking about the health effects.
Yeah.
And no, I drink it black. And he's like, oh, well, I guess that's better than some other vices you could have.
Yeah, I still don't. I know that you drink your coffee black. I still don't know how you do that. I've tried even good coffee.
That's great.
I'm not saying that Tim Hortons isn't good coffee, but let's be honest. I mean, there's a lot of coffee better.
Just keep going on this one.
I have to put at least milk in or sugar. I can't do it.
Joel?
Once you go black?
Yeah, don't finish that statement either. Quick look at the out-of-town scoreboard. The Capitals, they're up 2-1 on the Boston Bruins at the end of 20 minutes there.
Not a lot of games tonight.
Not a lot of games, just three games tonight. So the other two games haven't yet started. The Wild at the Flames, the Avalanche at the Kings. Those are the two games later. Question for you guys, who's Spencer Martin? Do you know who Spencer Martin is?
Is it a backup goalie somewhere?
Spencer Martin is the starting goaltender for the Colorado Avalanche tonight at the Los Angeles Kings.
Wow.
I guess Pickard got the night off.
Pickard will be the starter for the Calvin Pickard, Winnipeg player, of course, will be the starting goaltender for most of the season going forward as Semyon Varlamov out for the remainder of the year. Spencer Martin, courtesy of our good friend Mike Chambers of the Denver Post, the starting goalie tonight for the Colorado Avalanche.
Are they the clubhouse leader right now for the tire fire tag?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're running away with that title and then some. I mean,
not even at the turn yet, and they've already...
They're 10 points behind the Arizona Coyotes for dead last in the league.
Drew,
they're not just bad.
Drew, the Avalanche have 13 wins all year. The Columbus Blue Jackets have already won 16 games in a row this year.
It's not even in the same stratosphere how bad they are.
They're the leader in the Nolan Patrick sweepstakes is what they are.
Sure. The problem with that, of course, is Nolan Patrick doesn't play defense.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as much as he'll help... You know, and the point has been well taken. I'm pretty sure it's you who's made this point on the show a couple times, Joel, is obviously they're in need of a huge reorganization. And we'll talk to Drew Spivak on Saturday, who covers the Colorado Avalanche.
Yeah.
But why should it be Joe Sakic, the guy making those decisions, when he's partly responsible for them being in this predicament to begin with?
Totally, right now. And if you're entering the deadline, and what are the names floating around? Duchesne, Landeskog?
Yeah.
Do you want him making that move? You want him making that move, especially if moving forward, if he's not going to be the general manager to really, you know, change this thing and turn it around.
Unless somebody's making you a godfather offer, I'm not sure why you trade Duchesne or Landeskog at the deadline.
Hold on, does that involve a horse head?
It doesn't, but that's an interesting suggestion there, Ez. I'm not sure why, obviously they're completely out of it. This year is a utter disaster, so there's no urgency.
Yep.
To make the trade. It's one thing if there's urgency on the guys you're going to lose for nothing. The pending UFAs, fine, you can try and dish them off as much as, you know, 1 month from today is March 1st. So you have to trade those guys. But the guys you have under contract, there's no reason to trade Matt Duchesne now as opposed to in June, or Gabriel Landeskog now as opposed to in June. They're just, I mean, there's no rush.
Oh, no,
you're not going to improve. Like, if you improve, what are you going to improve to? Maybe catch Arizona?
Totally agree. I guess we'll just see how desperate a team is and what they're willing to give up. Which brings us back to the point. Do you want Joe Sakic in charge of that trade?
It's something we will talk about on Saturday's Illegal Curve Hockey Show. That gets underway at 8 a.m. here on TSN 1290. Big thanks to the guests on NHL This Week, Luke Horak, St. Louis Blues correspondent, Dave Jamieson of TSN 1260 in Edmonton, and Craig Ludwig, Dallas Stars color analyst. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website.
Sugar in that coffee, Drew.
Big thanks to our sponsors, Keener Jersey, Zappia Group Realty, Bernstein's Deli, Linden Market Dental Center, and Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For producer Al, doing a great job behind the board. For Joel Marcoux and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. Until Saturday at 8 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck.